We know we have freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and other freedoms specified in the U.S. Constitution and Bill of Rights. It also grants us a protection of a broader notion of liberty. There are times, though, when constitutional law allows for limits on individual liberties to protect people in general. For example, the famous observation that the freedom of speech doesn't give us the right to shout fire in a crowded theater. So how do we find that balance? Our next guest wrote a piece for the Chronotype, the Rice Lake area newspaper, to take a look at what happens to ordered liberty when it comes to individual rights versus public protections. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Where do you think we need to draw the balance, draw the line between allowing people to do what they want and having limits on that so everybody has, in effect, more liberty? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Eric Casper is a professor of political science and the director of the Menard Center for Constitutional Studies at UW-Eau Claire. Eric, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
I know you think about the Constitution often. What got you thinking about this particular issue of ordered liberty this month?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of conversations going on around the country right now as far as what freedoms are protected by the U.S. Constitution. And I think that that's a good, productive national conversation that we can have. I think that in order for us to really have that conversation, it should be informed by what the U.S. Supreme Court has interpreted the word liberty or our freedoms under the Constitution to mean. Doesn't mean we always have to agree with the Supreme Court, but it means that we should understand what the Supreme Court has said about these freedoms in order for us to have a better conversation about it.
In that piece I mentioned, you talked about the idea of ordered liberty. What do we mean by that?
Sure. Well, there are individual freedoms, some of which you cited here in the opening, that are specifically protected by the Constitution, particularly the Bill of Rights, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, and so on. But the Constitution also protects liberty. There's a protection for liberty in the 14th Amendment that applies to state governments. There's a similar provision that would apply to protecting liberty when it comes to your rights with the federal government. So what are these more generalized notions of liberty? Well, we have to go back to understand that to U.S. Supreme Court precedent. Of course, the U.S. Supreme Court exercises a power of judicial review, tells us what the Constitution means from an authoritative standpoint. And in a famous case earlier in the 20th century called Pelko versus Connecticut, the Supreme Court is interpreting what that word liberty in the 14th Amendment means. And it describes this concept of protecting rights that are of the very essence of a scheme of ordered liberty. And so it doesn't mean that people can do whatever they want in this sense, but it does mean that the court is going to ask, is it part of this notion of ordered liberty? Does it get to our principles of justice that we have in our traditions? And as the court puts it, in the conscience of our people, to be to the level that it's ranked as a fundamental right.
You give a very concrete example, literally looking at the rules of the road and traffic. And so one way I could look at a stop sign or the fact that I can't legally drive on a sidewalk, I could say, well, that's limiting my ability to do stuff. Therefore, that's infringing on my liberty. But that's not really the way we think about it, is it? What can you talk about that in the context of what we're talking about here, ordered liberty?
Yeah, that the Supreme Court over time has given more scrutiny to laws that would affect either a right that's specifically enumerated in the Constitution, like in the Bill of Rights, or a law that would restrict voting or that would affect equal protection of the law. But outside of those types of categories of fundamental rights, the Supreme Court gives more deference to government in order to pass laws that are good faith efforts to regulate public health and protect public health and public safety. And so, as you point out, traffic laws are one example of that, that you have things like speed limits and requirements to stop at red lights and, requirements that certain streets are one-way streets and others are two-way streets. You know, all of these laws, ultimately, they put some sort of regulation on what we can do and when we can do it. But they're not restrictions on fundamental freedoms the way the court would interpret these constitutional rights. These types of laws ensure that we don't have completely unregulated roads, which would be more dangerous. Far more people would be getting into car crashes if we didn't have those types of regulations to have this scheme of ordered liberty. So by promoting order and public safety, these types of regulations actually protect our greater freedom to, in this instance, safely travel where we want, when we want, and how we want.
Talking to Eric Casper, professor of political science and director of the Menard Center for Constitutional Studies at UW-Eau Claire. Talk about a piece he wrote in the Rice Lake Chronotype about our concept of liberty in the United States. What does the Constitution and the Supreme Court, the interpreters of said Constitution, say about when we can restrict people's ability to do things in order to protect wider liberties for people at large? Just heard that example of traffic laws, for example. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have questions or thoughts about whether or not particular regulations ultimately infringe rights, or do you think there are good trade-offs to be made on things like the rules of the road or public health laws, say? You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Eric, public health laws, of course, at top of mind right now with questions about when can the government require, say, mask wearing during a pandemic or mandate vaccines in certain circumstances. How do we, and not everybody's going to agree about particular examples necessarily, as you write in your piece, but how do we start to weigh that with the concept of ordered liberty?
Well, you know, one way of thinking about that is that we do have specified freedoms that are identified in the text of the Constitution, or that have been identified by court decision. And the Constitution, in that sense, sets a floor, if you will, in terms of the freedoms, the liberties that are protected. And beyond that, what you know, government cannot infringe upon, what government is not allowed to do, there is discretionary power that government has to pass laws, to make regulations. And so the question will be then, how do we as a society make that determination, what we want the government to do, and how to regulate the sorts of things that we encounter in everyday life, such as, you know, things like, you know, having food safety laws in place, or having school dress codes or fire codes and these sorts of things. What should those regulations look like? To what degree should they be regulated? I mean, that comes down to areas where the government has some discretion, but it can make some choices based on input that it receives from we the people, and we the people can give that input through voting, as well as through exercising one of our fundamental freedoms in terms of the freedom of expression.
Have these issues, these debates that end up often before the courts, have they been going on since there was a United States?
Well, I mean, we certainly see since the beginning of the country, these questions about what does that word liberty in the Constitution, if it's either liberty in the 14th Amendment, since that amendment was ratified in 1868, or even these general notions of freedom that are protected in the Bill of Rights, mm-hmm. dating back to 1791. I mean, there's always some question as far as what does that mean and what is protected there? You know, one of the things, and there are Supreme Court decisions that talk about this, going back to, for instance, McCulloch versus Maryland, where Chief Justice Marshall talks about, you know, the Constitution was written in a way that it was meant to endure for ages to come. And sometimes what that means is these Constitution writers don't provide a very detailed level of specificity about what is protected. And that is something that then gets interpreted by the courts in terms of their exercise of judicial review, telling us specifically, authoritatively, what the Constitution means. But of course, we as citizens and those of us who share the country and live under our Constitution, all of us can certainly interpret for ourselves what the Constitution means, to have this conversation where we may want to, you know, petition the government to exercise the discretion it has in a certain way, or if court decisions really, we don't think that the court has made the right decision. There are a number of instances in U.S. history that spurred on a movement to amend the Constitution so it says something else, to overturn a Supreme Court's interpretation of that document.
We're talking to Eric Casper, professor of political science and director of the Menard Center for Constitutional Studies at UW-Eau Claire. He wrote the piece, The Constitutional Protection of Ordered Liberty, for the Chronotype in Rice Lake. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there any, for instances, you'd like to bring up now when it comes to when the government can or can't restrict what we as individuals can do in order to protect wider liberty for others? rules of the road, public health regulations, other big issues or small that are in the news today, call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. The conversation continues coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation now with Eric Casper, professor of political science and director of the Menard Center for Constitutional Studies at UW-Eau Claire, looking at the balancing act between individual liberties and laws and regulations that might limit particular actions for individuals in order to preserve safety and maybe even liberty for a wider group. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions in the abstract or with specific examples in mind, 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to your calls now. Frank is with us in La Crosse. Frank, hi.
Yes, hello. I'd like the professor's explanation as to how the Supreme Court made a political decision regarding the Second Amendment. I believe it was in the last couple of decades that they pretty much blow away the whole forefathers' interpretation that the right to bear arms is a regulated militia, not an individual. So how do they omit that reference to the militias?
Frank, thanks a lot for the call, Eric. It's a topic we've spent hours and hours on this show and others on the Ideas Network. But it's a good example of balancing what's spelled out as a right with some ambiguity and how it plays out over time in the Supreme Court.
Yeah, exactly. We have earlier court decisions, mostly from the 19th century and the early 20th century, that gave a more narrow interpretation to what's protected by the Second Amendment as far as any individual rights that are there. But beginning with the Heller case in 2008, we have a couple of decisions from the court finding an explicit Second Amendment right, individual right to keep and bear arms there. Now, that right is not an unlimited right, and even writing in the opinion of the court in that Heller decision, Justice Scalia explained how finding an individual right to keep and bear arms does not negate a number of regulations that are within that concept of ordered liberty, things like restrictions on being able to bring firearms into government buildings or schools, or restrictions on people who are felons from owning firearms, regulation of the commercial sale of firearms. Supreme Court, even in that case, very explicitly stated that it's not an unlimited right. And so in that sense, if we want to draw a comparison to other rights, the First Amendment, for instance, freedom of speech, the court has found that there are outer limits to that right. And the court has also, as drawing an analogy as well to the Second Amendment, the court there has found greater protection for the freedom of speech over time. And what the court has found is protected there is significantly greater in a number of respects compared to what would have been the case, say, a century ago.
Thanks a lot for that call, Frank, at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Jaya now in Burlington. Jaya, hi.
Hi. So my question deals with earlier the guest was saying that they allow the government a certain amount of latitude to restrict rights for the common good. And I'm wondering, legally or as far as the court is concerned, is the same weight given to the government's ability to prevent us from doing something as it is to require us to do something?
Oh, interesting. A negative or a positive law, I guess, in effect.
Yeah, and most of the freedoms, for instance, that are specified in the Bill of Rights do have that negative understanding to them as far as the government protects your right by not doing something and then, you know, you're free to act. But that's not always the case when it comes to these types of freedoms under the Constitution. Sometimes, one example of an unenumerated right where the court has found is one of those liberties protected by the 14th Amendment, for instance, is when it comes to marriage, where the court over time has struck down laws that banned interracial marriage or laws that banned same-sex marriage. But even there, with the protection of that right to marriage being found in the Constitution, there are still requirements that can be put in place where the government can say you have to meet certain criteria still in terms of age requirements, for instance, or you have to get a license, you have to go through that process. And so there are, even within those rights that are protected, there are some things that can be added on by government and the Second Amendment would be another example, right? As I mentioned earlier, these requirements or regulations when it comes to the commercial sale of arms, whereby the way that that sale is conducted and what the buyer and the seller have to do, states can still regulate that, even though the court has found that there is that individual right to keep and bear arms now.
Thanks a lot for the call, Jaya, at 800-642-1234. Talking to Eric Casper from UW-Eau Claire, political scientist there, about the Constitution, our individual liberties, and when they can, according to Supreme Court interpretations, be limited for wider liberties for everybody. Still time for your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Rick is with us in Rhinelander. Rick, hi.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'd be interested in your guest's opinion. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has struck down Governor Evers' mass mandate as being unconstitutional. And based on the comments from your guest, the U.S. Supreme Court in many cases has ruled in favor of government regulation for the public benefit. In other words, in this case, you have a pandemic where people's health is at risk. As an example, here in Mondovi, we just had a high school student who died, and suddenly the school board reversed itself and put in place a mass mandate. But what would be your guest's opinion of if and why is it that the United States Supreme Court did not get involved in the Evers mass mandate question?
Rick, thanks for the call. And as I understand it, Eric, that case in the Supreme Court, the decision hinged on what emergency powers were held by the governor and for how long, not so much on the validity of a mask mandate in and of itself. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that with these types of questions, there's kind of two different things to think about, although they are interrelated. I mean, one is, what is the specific right that is protected, and to what extent is it protected by either the state constitution or the U.S. Constitution? But then also, there's this question of, does the government possess the power to take that action? And so the question in that case came down to more of a power question in terms of did the governor or did the executive branch have that power, or, you know, in order for that to continue on, did the legislature have to exercise its power to either delegate that authority to the executive branch or to, you know, make a mandate of its own? And, you know, that's something that we see at the federal level as well. I mean, one of the questions that is going to be ongoing when it comes to some of the new mandates that we're seeing at the federal level when it comes to vaccine mandates that are working their way through OSHA is, you know, did Congress delegate that power to OSHA in order to enact the law or to make that policy? That's the first kind of threshold question. Then if it did delegate that power, if the power does exist, by exercising the power in the way that it does that violate any individual rights? So it's kind of a two-track set of considerations there in those types of cases.
Thanks a lot for that call, Rick. I appreciate it. And that the vaccine requirements, as you said, at the federal level, enforced through OSHA, saying if you want to work in these kind of workplaces, you have to get the vaccine, in a way a poster child for the conversation we're having. What can the government require in order to protect people apart from an individual? What kind of conversations are you hoping we have about this?
Well, I mean, there's first of all this question about, as I mentioned, government power when it comes to if the federal government, first of all, the federal government versus the state governments, they have different sets of powers. State governments have general police power, which includes the power to protect public health. It has been interpreted by the courts to be fairly broad. The federal government has delegated powers through Congress. And so if Congress is going to pass a law, it has to exercise that power through one of these enumerated powers or implied powers it has in the Constitution. So it comes down to questions over is Congress exercising that power, or has it delegated that power properly in terms of its ability to regulate interstate commerce or through its taxation power? But then, you know, going beyond these questions of taxation or commercial regulation or delegation of power from the legislative branch to the executive branch, you have questions about when the power is exercised, does it properly take into account some of the previously identified freedoms that are there, particularly kind of, first of all, that general idea of of freedom under either the Fifth or 14th Amendment, that word liberty there. And then, you know, questions about if some of these mandates will run up against the way the courts have interpreted the free exercise of religion in terms of sincerely held religious objections that people might have to those requirements.
In the wrap up to your piece that started this conversation, Eric, you say you hope people exercise their freedom of speech to have civil, respectful conversations about where we draw the lines and how we set the balance. Can you make the case that we should be having these conversations and keeping them civil?
Yeah, I mean, in that Palco decision in the earlier part of the 20th century, where the Supreme Court gives us this concept of ordered liberty as far as how it's interpreting what the Constitution means there, they do cite the freedom of speech as that indispensable condition of nearly every other form of freedom, right? That if people have that freedom, they can go out there and they can express what they think about what the government is doing. That's what gives us the ability to be able to have that debate about what the government does when it tries to exercise this power, if we think that power is being exercised properly or constitutionally. But it's a conversation, I think, that we need to have, remembering that we do all share this civil society we live in, and we need to find ways to get along and have those conversations in a civil way to the extent that we can.
Eric, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Eric Casper, professor of political science and director of the Menard Center for Constitutional Studies at UW-Eau Claire. He wrote the piece, The Constitutional Protection of Ordered Liberty, for the Chronotype in Rice Lake.